Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Actually, it's good afternoon for most of the country. We are live, and we are live with episode 3,747 of the Survival Podcast. I did take the day off yesterday. I went and played mini golf with my grandkids at an indoor place where it wasn't 100 freaking degrees outside, because even though it's October, it's still about 100 degrees down here. I'm not even kidding. It was 98 degrees, according to the truck, when I took the kids back to mommy yesterday. And, of course, for those that are new, when I say kids, I'm talking about my grandkids. So they're not like a divorce split thing. Just anyway, that's why we had a rewind yesterday. But we are back and on the attack, and we have got a great one for you today. I'm going to be bringing on Lori Ballou in just a moment. She's going to talk to you about her journey to reclaiming her health. And for those of you that are like, I'm getting older, I can't. No. You see how much gray is here? Yeah. There is no point in your life that you cannot restore your health unless you're in the dirt. If you're still fogging a mirror, you still have work to do. We're going to talk about doing it the easiest way, but the least talked about way by medical professionals, which is using ancestral nutrition. It's a funny thing. When human beings eat the food that they evolved to eat, a lot of the modern diseases that we have that are modern, they go away. We didn't have these problems. There's been a lot of advancements in medicine over the years, and we do live longer for it, but most of the advancements that keep us living longer are surgical, because there are things that go wrong or get broken or we get hit over the head with some or have a car wreck or whatever the surgery fixes. They're antibiotics, because there are infectious diseases and bacterial in particular that antibiotics have saved countless lives over. And it's also a lot of engineering, like the fact that our water's not dirty, et cetera, our sewage isn't laying in the street in the open, et cetera, helps a lot as well, that we drain things so we don't get malaria and stuff like that. But have you noticed, like, all that stuff that went away that they're so proud of, it's been replaced by, like, an epidemic of obesity and type 2 diabetes, and they tell you, like, it's not your fault, it's just the way you were born. Then why didn't anybody have it 300 years ago? They didn't, did they? It was barely a known thing, like diabetes type 1. It's genetic, yeah, but there's so many problems that we have today. Ken Berry once told me that there are more mobile clinical dialysis places, like where you can go in and quickly get your kidney dialysis now, than there are Subway restaurants. I thought he was full of crap. I just saw another one. There's now three between me and downtown Fort Worth, three of them that I know of. It's crazy, and there is no reason for us to be living this way. Animals in the wild don't have the problems that humans that were domesticated do, and the reason is they're eating the food they're supposed to eat. Could it be that simple? We'll talk to you, our special guest today, about that and a lot more today in just a moment. Before we do, I want to go ahead and recognize our sponsors for today. Sponsor of the day number one today is John Pugliano with the Wealthsteading Podcast, where you can learn to grow your wealth like you grow a garden. His most recent podcast, I haven't listened to it yet, but I need to. I have my own opinions on it. Another one-day panic on Wall Street, just released a couple days ago. Yeah, I think that's one of those things everybody just freaked out over, a Trump tweet. Investing is a long-term plan. John is really good at that. He's an exceptional money manager. He has a great podcast. Has an episode or two a week. They're not long, 10 to 15 minutes. Great insight by a guy that manages wealth for people with net wealth well in excess of $1 million. This is a guy you want to listen to. Check him out today. And, of course, he's a prepper, an expert council member, et cetera. So he's been working with us and been a good friend to the show for a long time. Next up today is Jeff, the Berkey guy, Gleason, with USABerkeyFilters.com. You ever, like, hear on the radio or your local television that your local water authority says, hey, we advise you for the next while, until we tell you otherwise, to, like, boil your water before you drink it? Do you know what that means? That you were drinking water you shouldn't have been before they figured it out? That's always how it happens. Like, every once in a while they screw something up and immediately know they did it, but a lot of times something happens to the water supply, people start showing up at the ER and whatever, and eventually, like a week or two into it, they figure out, hey, they're coming for the water, we better tell everybody. If you were using a Berkey, most of the problems that could ever happen like that, all the other problems that come up from drinking poor quality water would just never happen. I'm on a well. That ain't happening to me, but I still use my Berkey all the time. It looks great. You can, you know, produce water of the highest quality for pennies a gallon. Been around forever. Excellent equipment. And Jeff is the guy that's been around forever, too. He's been a Berkey dealer. I don't know exactly how long, but I've been doing this show 17 years, And he's been doing this longer than I've been doing the show. He's still a sponsor after all those years as well. Check him out today. Don't get your Berkey or your filters or anything else from the guy at the gun show that started doing it 3 days ago. Get it from the original Jeff the Berkey guy, Gleason. With that, let's go ahead and bring our special guest on, Lori Ballou. Lori, welcome to the Survival Podcast.
Well, I'm so excited. Thank you for having me on. I just love the name of your program because this is all about survival of the fittest and still, because, I mean, if only 12% of the population is healthy and maybe 6% are really thriving, we got a problem. And like you were saying, like, we're not eating the way we're supposed to eat, and we do need to be on the attack, because, like, this is all that we need to do for ourselves. We need to actually go out and hunt and gather our health so that we have health, because it isn't going to happen from the medical system. And I did not know that they had mobile kidney stations. Like, oh my
yeah.
God.
I think I used the wrong word. Not only mobile, more like walk in, walk out. Like, it's almost like a kiosk at a mall, not a kiosk, but it's like, you know, like a furniture store at a drive-in mall or something. Like, they're all over the place.
Yeah, I was just thinking the other day that if we were to actually have more low-carb nutrition and everybody getting on the bandwagon as they should, because that is our natural process, they would have to close down those kidney buildings.
Yeah, and maybe
they would lose so much money in profit. So, yeah, you need to think about where that profit is going and why we need to do what we need to do, because it's about having health for ourselves.
Yeah, I don't want to derail us too far right out of the beginning, but do you know who DaVita is?
DaVita, no, I'm not quite.
They're public enemy number one on the Spearco list. They are the company behind most of these dialysis clinics.
Okay.
That's the right word, dialysis clinic. They make all their money from doing dialysis, and the primary user they're serving is somebody with end-stage kidney failure waiting on a transplant who got there through obesity and type 2 diabetes.
Right.
They're also partners with the American Diabetes Association, and they put out recipes for your kidney health, like cranberry oatmeal cookies for breakfast.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, it is an unholy, like, Bohemian Grove-level Alex Jones conspiracy that's real. It's bad.
It's sad when they say you could have cereal for breakfast and that's going to be healthy and that's give it all to your kids, and yet beef and eggs are vilified still. And, you know, I like to reference the doctors who are in the know and they're doing it, like Dr. Jason Fung. Everybody's got to know his name. And if he's a kidney nephrologist, doctor working in Canada, and he's like, well, my clients either aren't listening to me or what they're doing is not working, and so let's just fast them and see if they can get healthy that way so they don't have kidney damage. And so that's how he got started. And I think it's, you know, it's really looking at how we could get the body to be optimized.
And I want to talk to you about how you got started on this. But before we even do that, I want to go back before you knew anything about it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what was your professional background? And just kind of come up to the point in your life where you said, I need to do something different. Then we'll talk about that.
Yeah, well, I was working in a natural food store. And prior to that, I'd been already researching and living diets, researching diets, trying to figure out how to lose weight and keep it off. And because one day in my mid-30s, I'd come in from outside. My husband was sitting on the sofa, never looked at me, and he said, when are you going to lose the weight? Well, I was 225 pounds, and that's when my weight loss journey started, you know. And I didn't succeed till I was 60. So there was a lot going on in there. But what I ended up doing was just reading the books. I'm a voracious reader. My mom started me out that way. I had done Atkins back when I was a child. That helped me lose 50 pounds and reset. So I've had this problem my whole life. But it wasn't until I started studying ancestral nutrition, started reading Gary Taub's book on why we get fat, you know, really diving into low-carb nutrition, that I started to get a handle on it. And but I was working at a natural food store, so I had access to a lot of books. I was there with learning more about supplements. I became a supplement specialist. I started experimenting more with supplements, trying to understand why I had asthma. And, you know, oh, is this supplement going to solve my asthma? It helped the symptoms, and the asthma never went away. It came back every year. I dealt with that for 20 plus years. Sinusitis, bronchitis, inflammation. I would lose weight and I never lost the inflammation. That, I am understanding, is so powerful, because I had a client that came in and she goes, yeah, I did this work challenge and I lost weight, but I never lost inflammation. She still needed to come to me to figure everything out.
Mm.
So in that, and I just started thinking about that. I'm like, yeah, that's what happened with me. If you lose weight on a low calorie diet, you do not lose the inflammation. It is still there. That is powerful. So I just kept putting more pieces of the puzzle into my brain, and that natural food store started really understanding how food is information to the body. And when I realized that I could get into a keto diet, and there was no turning back, I went to a couple of bulletproof conferences. I heard about a 10-year brain cancer survivor, a body scientist, and he was talking to me. I even asked him a question, and he says, like, yeah, you shouldn't eat fruit. You don't have the right body type for it. Anyways, I just jumped into bulletproof coffee. It saved my life. Turned my brain back on. I lost 20 pounds. My eyes started functioning again. I didn't even know they weren't functioning well. My hair started growing back in. I just got excited about life. And a lot of people, they'll go into this lifestyle change thinking it's restrictive, that they don't get to eat what they want to eat, and that they don't really understand that they can change their life for the better and get longevity, that you're turning off the disease risk body. Because something that's very transformative that happened for me during this process, and I didn't have a profession. I was both basically prior to that stay home mom. I was taking care of the family, staying home, but I was reading, researching, and trying to get out of the depression. I was stuck in depression and anxiety, and I couldn't get out as long as I had wheat, sugar, and dairy in my diet. So that's how keto and low carb nutrition helped me get out of and into that survival zone, to get out of that survival zone and into a thriving zone. That's where it really took off. And I kind of forgot where I was segueing. Oh yeah, a year into my keto diet, my body detoxed. You know what it detoxed? It detoxed melanoma right out of my neck.
Oh wow.
That was my bullet. And I kept thinking there was something after me. And I just kept like, God, you know, I got to really hurry and figure this out. Something's going to happen. I'm getting older, right? I was 53 when I started approximately, because I kind of look at it back as I went down into the Grand Canyon and walked to Phantom Ranch, but it was excruciating pain with my knees to getting all the way down there. And so I have since healed degenerating knees, detoxed that melanoma out of my body, reversed the depression, no more asthma, and just down 100 pounds. And so that's the power of actually going after what you want and understanding that we still need to go out and hunt and gather our health. You know, we have to look for the right foods for our body or we're going to be poisoned.
You know, it amazes me how much people are absolutely convinced that wheat and high sugar fruits and in large quantities too, right, are healthy, and it's all the results of a marketing campaign. In fact, multiple very effective marketing campaigns. Because, and I don't think people really get how true this is. If you go back, not 10,000 years of when they say ag started, you go back even just 5,000 years, you did not have mass quantities of food like this available. It just didn't exist. If you want to know how hard it is to produce wheat in quantity, get the old wheat that they would have grown 5,000 years ago and try to do it with a sickle in your backyard by yourself without a giant tractor and all the other stuff that goes with it, and then all the industrial processing that goes with it. And that's at least a food, like, it's not a food for humans, in my opinion, but it's at least like, it's a product that you're eating the way that it came off the stock once you get the whole off of it, which will literally choke you to death if you try to eat it without doing that first and break your teeth if you don't cook it. But at least it's that. Then add into, like, we're eating in literally industrial oils. Like when Crisco came out, no one would touch it. The first margarines that were released, I don't know if you noticed, there were laws in the United States that you couldn't call it butter, because when they put it in the stores and they called it anything but butter, no one would touch it. No one would eat it. There were all kinds of crazy-ass laws about if you use the word butter, you had to say it was imitation plant-derived butter, and they varied by, like, the individual states had different laws on this because of the time it wasn't essentially controlled by the Fed. And, I mean, they even had some states had laws, like Arkansas had a law, you're not allowed to color it yellow.
Oh, wow.
Deceptive. If you wanted to sell margarine, it had to be the way it actually looks before they dye it, which is basically white. It looks like Crisco.
Yeah, I remember back when I was a kid, and I was old enough to go to the store. My dad didn't want to go to the store, so he would send me and my sister, and he told us to go get margarine, and we came home with butter. We're like, we're not going to eat that.
Yeah.
So I just remember that one thing.
Yeah. I know my grandmother, like, she would have beat you with a rolling pin if you would have tried to get her to use Crisco.
I think my mom used, my grandmother used Crisco, but she was a baker. I think she might have used Crisco, but, she got swept up in all that. They say it's better for you.
Boy, they marketed it hard, too.
But she didn't survive past 65, I don't think. 65, 70, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, my grandparents on the side I'm talking about were old school Ukrainian first generation immigrants.
Right? Yeah.
The marketing just bounced off of them. Like, no, we're not doing that. Now, they ate a lot of potatoes and stuff like that, but at least the industrial fats, they just, stayed away from it. And I think it's really hard for people to get their head around the fact that this stuff that has been marketed to you, and if you're, I would say, our age or younger, right? You've never lived in a time where that marketing message wasn't happening. From radio,
right.
Television, schools, like from the 70s forward, hardcore, and really going back to like World War II. Mm-hmm. But about the 1970s is when they ramped that to 71 for other reasons. But and I just want to kind of get people's head around this. It's not healthy because they showed you a picture of amber waves waving in the field and some little farmer driving a little tractor that ain't where your wheat came from either. Right. Like that does not make it healthy. Can you talk about, when you did this, you lost 100 pounds, right? And that's probably not much more than you weigh right now. Looking, I can't know how tall you are, but you're
5'4".
You're 5'4". So you
average about 129.
So you lost almost half of what you are. Right. Like when you did that and you did that after 50,
correct.
What was your turning point? And what finally worked for you?
Well, the turning point, interestingly enough, was using targeted supplementation for gut health, like getting digestive enzymes and clearing the gut, because I started using a Bioptimizers Capex and digestive enzymes and their probiotic. And I had heard about them on a podcast with Dave Asprey. And I'm like, oh, my God, I need to have these things. Because I was like, my brain was open. I'm looking for solutions. I've only lost 20 pounds. I've had a 3-year weight loss stall. And I'm like, OK, what's the next step? What's going to work for me? I'm still feeling better than I've ever felt my whole life. So I never considered it something I shouldn't do. I was just looking for more information. And so when I did that, I lost 15 pounds in 3 months and I could feel things sloughing off. So if I had known then that I could run a gut test, a GI map test and find out exactly what's going on and then just target whatever was going on, I probably would have lost more weight more readily or just been more aware of what I was actually doing. But I was in that experimentation process. So that was a big healing process for me that was a big takeaway that I can still listen and learn and apply and be proactive and go after what it is that I wanted to do and get results. And so that totally empowered me to just continue to actually look for the next thing. And what I ended up doing was studying functional diagnostic nutrition. And that was what gave me the avenue to understand how to use functional labs to find hidden healing opportunities in my weight loss blocks. And it was doing that that allowed me to leave a job that I'd been at for 16 years where I had 3 weeks of paid vacation. And I just didn't want to work there anymore. I'd outgrown it. The lights were making my eyes bonkers. I mean, like right now I got lights in my eyes, but those artificial lights at the store, by the end of the day, I was going crazy. And one of the things that I know I needed next was, I didn't know I needed it, but I just needed to get out from under those lights, out from under that stress. And I even worked COVID during retail during COVID. It was horrifying how, all of that process, but it was very stressful. But once I got through 2022, I just decided I was going to work from home as a keto health coach. And then I ended up transitioning to functional diagnostic nutrition. And that gave me the purpose, the power, and the passion to create more lifestyle shifts and to create the process that I use today to help people lose the weight. And I've, at this point over the last year, I haven't had a single person come into my, my practice that didn't lose weight. And it's a lot of it's visceral fat. You could turn off that visceral fat and get rid of the inflammation pretty quickly once you do the right steps.
Did you have, you mentioned the melanoma thing,
yeah.
Which I'd like to talk to you about more in just a minute, but I'm just saying, when you started eating this way, did you have any symptoms of what some people call keto flu or anything like that? Because I found about 50% of people just start feeling better, and about 50% of people go through some shit, and I went through some shit. I had like rashes. I had pimples that looked like mini boils popping up.
And wow.
I
mean, like, it's a like, major detox.
You know, you take a shower the night before and, you know, you wash everything, so you know there's nothing like under your arm or something, and you wake up in the morning like, ow, and there's this like overnight, this giant tiny boil of a pimple and some other stuff. And so when I talk to people about this, like especially friends, family, things like that, and my wife's around, I always tell them about the potential initial negative that you'll have to get through. My wife's always like, shut up, because you want them to do it. And I'm like, but if you don't tell them that, and then that starts happening, what they think is this isn't for me. And I'm like,
right, right. They'll think it's not safe.
If you stop using heroin, you're also going to feel bad. But more heroin's not the solution. If you stop using meth, and if you look at sugar, and I don't just mean like, yes, all carbs are sugar, but I'm talking pure, refined white
sugar.
Looks
like heroin.
It is actually produced almost exactly the same way they refine cocaine.
Well, sugar went around the earth faster than the cocaine and heroin ever did. It was the most. Yep. It was the once they processed that and created it, it was the most addictive food source on the planet, and it went around very rapidly everywhere. So it is a very rats that are addicted to cocaine or heroin and sugar will eat sugar before they eat the other drugs. It is.
Yeah.
And then if you put that said rat that just ate that sugar in a bath of water, it cannot figure out how to get out of the water. But if it didn't have any sugar on the brain, it would go exactly to the high point in the pool, in the little bathtub, and it would get up out of the water. But if it had sugar, it can't figure out where that high point is. Yeah, to keep going around and around. It is crazy what it does to the brain.
There was a lot of wars and killing over it, too. I mean, if anybody really wants to know more about that, so we don't get derailed here, but just Google the Sandwich Islands, and you'll find out the Sandwich Islands are what they originally called Hawaii. And then you can dig down into the sugar stuff from there, and you'll find that. And my point with that is when you have a substance that people get inherently violent over, it usually is a drug.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if you just think about today, like, what does everybody get violent about protecting? It's all drug cartels.
One of the things that's interesting is because, you know, you were mentioning how everybody wants to eat the wheat and they think it's healthy.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that people are like, well, I'll eat sourdough bread because it's a better choice.
Yeah.
You know, it's about getting the brain to feel like you're doing the right thing and you're on the right track. But it's still from Dr. William Davis, a cardiologist, he wrote the wheat belly. He says it's still wheat and it's still going to cause leaky gut. And if you're going to get a disease, you're going to get it because of eating wheat, period. So that's what causes that leaky gut situation overall.
Well, and the thing is, let's say it is better. That just means less bad. So there's that alone. But then the question becomes, why is it better? Why is it better? What makes it better? Like, you're clearly indicating there's something wrong with the product if we have to go through this process to make it better. Right? I mean, and to me, that's like an eye-opening thing. So this thing that you were told is so healthy needs to go through this natural fermentation process to be considered more edible by humans. Here's a funny idea. Maybe if you can pick it up and eat it by doing nothing to it, except maybe throwing some salt on it, maybe that's the food you should eat. Because I've always found it interesting. Like, one of the things Ken Berry says is if you see a fat animal for its type, so obviously an elephant has a lot of fat on it, but it's not obese for its species. If you see an animal obese for its species, it's in a zoo or it's eating our garbage.
Right. Like our pets, dogs and cats, you know, I mean, we're basically animals living in zoos. We're kept up in houses. We're not getting outside. We're not touching the earth. We're not, you know, you're blocking sunlight with your sunglasses. You're not getting that circadian health and circadian balance that our species needs to connect with the earth. I mean, that is a huge healing opportunity right there.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. We are not meant to be awake with lights in our eyes until midnight every night. We're not.
No.
We're not.
No.
It's not normal. There's no place in nature like that. Now, we're not turning away from science here. We're actually embracing it. And part of that, you mentioned panels and testing. What about some functional labs? I know here's some stuff you do. The Dutch test, GI mapping, HTMA to cover root causes of weight gain. There is a lot of people in this space that say, just go keto or carnivore and don't worry about it. What do these types of tests do to help somebody on that journey?
Yeah, so what they do, are they actually going to show your you know, maybe not exactly, but I'm going to be able to analyze it. You're going to be able to find your hidden healing opportunities, your weight loss blocks, what's going on in your body specifically, so you don't waste time trying to correct it by going in a different direction. Like you could have low commensal bacteria, or you could have an elevated bacteria that's inflammatory. And so you could take a look at what your bacteria is doing and know what to support and what to correct. That's a big healing opportunity. And, you know, there's also H. pylori, parasites, candida. You know, you need to correct all of those things for your gut to function, because our immune system is in the gut. And you're not going to be able to get that resiliency, that adrenal and cortisol health, if your gut's not functioning, because your brain won't function. You won't be able to get that energy to your brain. So we do have to work on that with the GI map. And then with the Dutch test, what you're looking for is your adrenal and cortisol, you know, levels and what your hormones are doing, but what your methylation's doing. And it's going to show if there's elevations in the estriol, it's going to show gut inflammation. So you could see dysbiosis and gut inflammation by some of the patterns in the GI map, in the Dutch test. And so all of these kind of correlate. So what I like to do is run six core labs with the HTMA. And there's also a permeability and a metabolic panels and the food sensitivity test. All of these things together gives me so much information. Map out your body, figure out what to do. These are how you put your body back together. Again, you know exactly what to do. You get a roadmap. And that thing about you were mentioning, I forgot to address it when I was talking, was you were talking about all the symptoms that you could get with starting keto. And a lot of that is because you could have mineral imbalances. So that hair test helps us determine your mineral imbalances. A lot of people have really low salt potassium. And if you have really low salt and potassium, you're going to be dehydrated. And if you're going into keto dehydrated with low minerals, you're going to feel it. And so you need to bring in that salt and that sodium. We're not supposed to minimize our sodium. We're supposed to have the right amount. Absolutely. You know, the kidney knows how to process salt. But if you gum it all up with sugar, your body's not going to function the way it's designed, and you'll hold on to salt and have edema. But we need to process it. And then there's also the inflammatory response with aldosterone. If you are having too much sugar and aldosterone is elevated because of processed sodium in the diet and inflammation, that's going to cause more problems. And, you know, the liver and the gallbladder get sludgy. If you've got fatty liver and you're starting keto, it could be that because of those mineral imbalances and that sluggish liver, you're going to have more symptoms for detox. So that's the first thing I address, is minerals and deficiencies and making sure that you feel good as you go through keto and get started. And a lot of it is people are just doing it too low fat, and they might be focused on too much protein in the beginning, and that could cause you to have more symptoms too fast, because you are, it's just a balance. It just kind of depends on where you are in your diet and lifestyle. I remember I've been helping this one lady who came to me. She started carnivore already. Just as she was coming into me, 16 years of fatigue, depression, and pain, that she was not able to live the life that she wanted to. So what was going on was there was a lot of H. pylori, dehydration, mineral malabsorption. She couldn't get her body to function until she got the minerals balanced. So it's a simple test, but it tells me so much about how to guide you into the right process so that you feel able to make more lifestyle changes and start correcting it layer by layer by layer. You got to unpeel the onion and then figure out where it is you need to go.
There's a lot in there. On the salt, that was never an issue for me. And I always tell people to use a good, you know, non-refined salt. I don't care if it's sea salt, Himalayan, Redmond's, whatever, something with a good mineral profile. I think there is, though, a lot of detoxing that can happen. And I think that has all, like, the liver thing, absolutely. But I also think it, like, how long did you do what you did, and how much have you stored in that fat? For me, I think it was mostly just those toxins, because you release so much fat so fast in like that initial 60 days
mm-hmm.
that all of a sudden these toxins that have been stored up for 10, 15, 20 years are flowing through your blood in large quantities, and it takes time to get them out. The salt, I think, is also hugely important, though, because you can easily get into electrolyte imbalances, because one thing that critics will say, and they're right, they just don't get the point,
right,
is that initially, like, yeah, you'll lose 10, 15 pounds in two and a half weeks, maybe 3 weeks, and most of it's water loss. Most, I don't know, but a lot of it is. And that's because you shouldn't have that much water being held by your body anyway.
It's inflammation. It's that raised aldosterone. Yep. We need to get that process to start. That's how you get the fat loss.
When you flush it, there's only one place for it to come out. And when you do, you're going to take a lot of salt and minerals with you. So I think it's good to be eating salt all the time. I don't believe anything that they said. The war on salt is bullshit. But especially in that initial time, I think using a good mineral salt is really important.
Yeah, one of the things I always have my clients start is a salt soleil. That's easy to look up. You could check out some, Google it up for recipes for salt soleil. And basically, you just want to put some spring water in a jar with a couple of inches of the good sodium, like Redmond salt, Celtic sea salt, and or pink salt. And then that saturates overnight. And then you take a teaspoon to a tablespoon of that every morning with a little bit of potassium, or you could do cream of tartar. And that gives you that balance of the extra minerals at a really inexpensive price to get started. Add some MSM into that, and you're addressing inflammation at the same time.
You also use the term ancestral nutrition. I've heard that from a lot of people. And I've heard it from people that I love, but I don't necessarily think are using it properly. And that would be people like my good friend. He's a good friend, Ken Berry. Ancestral nutrition has now become beef, bacon, butter, and eggs. And I do not think that humans are carnivores. I think that the carnivore life is actually a really good life for us to live. I think one of the reasons people are such fans of it is it eliminates all of the guesswork. Right. If you will get healthier, you will live a long time, and there's nothing you need from plants, but things like herbs and seasonings and spices. And when I say herbs, I'm talking about things like fresh basil and stuff like that. To me, humans, as long as we've been around, have figured stuff out.
Right. Those are medicinal. They're medicinal.
Right? Yeah. And if you look at things like the North American survival food was pemmican, which is dried beef mm-hmm. and tallow rendered, poured over, but usually containing something like some native berries or something like that. So when you say ancestral, are you broader than beef, bacon, butter, and eggs, I guess?
I am broader because I study functional nutrition overall, and
okay.
I do more low-carb nutrition because that's been my journey and how I've been healing. And as a woman with hormonal issues and menopause, I think it's really hard for women to go strictly carnivore because there's so many hormonal balances, cortisol, adrenal issues that we need to balance, and we want our brains to function and feel good in our body. So there's a balance there that I kind of that I work with, that I play with, and I don't feel good on straight up carnivore. I mean, I could do it for a few days, but it doesn't make my brain function the way I want it to. So I have noticed overall time that I like a higher fat diet, but I also understand the nutritional benefits from medicinal herbs. I love targeted supplementations for what I need it to do. I'm going to bring in salt and potassium, and I'm going to focus on making sure I get all of those items. And I like a good salad. Arugula is an amazing food. You want to be able to detox your liver and your gallbladder, and getting those bitter foods not only help us, our bodies detox, and those used to be around. Those came in mm-hmm. spring. In spring, you can get out and go and get those bitter herbs, those bitter foods to help guide, your digestion from winter to kind of prep for summer. And mm-hmm. I think if you're looking at eating for the seasons, what was growing during those times. That's how we as a species evolved to eat. But we would eat the things that, like you said, we understood what was poisonous, what was not poisonous. People avoided specific things. We're told, and to this day, like, don't eat a berry off a tree unless you know what it is. You know, like you don't know if it's poisonous, so you only eat the ones that look like blackberries or strawberries. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I was at the store yesterday and I bought cranberries because to me, organic cranberries, I stick them in the freezer. I use a few at a time when I want to put it in some water or a smoothie or whatever. I use it for polyphenols. I use it for that red medicinal purpose to help create a better short chain fatty acid profile in my intestinal tract. I use greens kind of the same way. So I look at the health of vegetables, kimchi, sauerkraut, like what's going to get your gut functioning and working the way you want it to so your brain can work.
I've done bouts of carnivore because it's a good reset. And if you are having issues, like you and I might eat the same thing and you have an issue and I don't, or I have an issue and you don't.
Right.
And when you go to a baseline reductionist to like as reduced as possible, which carnivore pretty much is, as you add things back in, you determine what causes issues for you individually. But I also think a lot of it has to do with, number one, like you, I waited till pretty late in life before I fixed. That means I did a lot more damage than someone. If you were eating this way from the time you were a kid, you might be able to have even more of some of these other things and have less issues. Like how much damage did you do before you started putting things back together is part of it. But then the seasonality is huge. Did our ancestors eat fruits from the forest? Yes. Okay. Agreed. How often did they do that? Not that often.
Just in the summer.
Before we started farting around with everything and making new cultivars and stuff like that, there just wasn't that much of it. And depending on the place that you were living would have a huge impact on your diet. You were not going to be eating figs if they were wild figs, not ones you took care of like a little, you know, baby in what today is like Pennsylvania, Ohio, right? If you were a Native American living up there, you weren't eating figs. If you lived on the equator, look, fig trees 1,000 miles tall, right? Figs fall down like rain, but still only at certain times of year.
Right, right.
And you had to compete with the howler monkeys and everything else to get them. And they could climb up there and you couldn't.
Yeah, so and then look at
the howler monkey in the ass with a dart that you rubbed on a frog and you ate the monkey. Right? This is to me, like if you want to know ancestral diets, go look at the few remaining indigenous societies that aren't on a government subsidy that live off the land like they always did. And they all do eat things other than meat. But meat is the primary thing. And if you look at the work of Dr. Weston Price, he actually, I didn't know this until I started working with the Price-Pottinger Foundation. He wanted to find a vegan or vegetarian indigenous society when he did his world tour. He was disappointed that he never did.
Wow, I hadn't heard that either.
I had no idea. And I'm like, well, that is, you know, that's stuff that's in the sideline notes, not in the book, right? That's part of the conservatory of all his work. And that to me speaks volumes. That tells us, because when I hear about, well, we, you know, someone said in the comments, and I don't think they, you know, they're being a sniper or anything, but like we evolved to eat grains that were fermented. We didn't evolve over a few thousand years. Evolution doesn't work that way. Right. Selective breeding can change your color and your height and all over a couple generations. But if evolution is something that happens over very long periods of time. And human beings walked around eating what they could kill or pick up or scavenge for 98% of the time that we have walked the earth based on how far back we think. And it might be further. So it could be 99%. That's how we evolved. To me, that's ancestral.
Right. Well, the thing about the agricultural age, there was just more people, more stomachs to feed. It was easier to protect yourself on a, you know, and stay put and just garden around your home and then make that bigger. But the studies are showing that we had more dental caries, our structure, we became shorter. We had more disease. The lifespan was shorter. I mean, we were more sick with the agriculture age. We didn't have more health. It was just that it was easier to do than to be a hunter-gatherer.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Can we talk maybe a little bit about the connection between blood sugar, hormones, and inflammation? You mentioned inflammation. To me, that was one of the things that I don't even think people know how inflamed they are till they're not.
Right.
Like, because you become accustomed to it. So something's like, man, I'm really achy today. So I feel pretty good. And then when you get rid of that inflammation, you're like, no, actually, I felt like dog shit. I just felt like less dog shit. So I thought it was good. And maybe also how that shows up, look, all these problems we have today, yes, joint pain, but also things like sleep problems or anxiety. Like, there's this litany of things wrong with people today that just doesn't seem to be historically, you know, something people tended to worry about.
Well, I think most people have inflammation. If you're eating the standard American diet and getting vegetable oils, you have inflammation in your body. You have visceral fat in your body, and that equates to pain. So, if you have any stiffness, pain, anything happening in your body, that's inflammation. You shouldn't have any pain in your body. I don't have any pain in my body at 62. You probably don't have any. You're eating good. And so you want to think about, like, I've had somebody say, you know, she's not even 50 yet. She goes, I wake up and the bottom of my feet hurt. Okay, well, there's inflammation. You could be getting neuropathy. Things are happening. If you're pre-diabetic, you've got disease turned on. You're creating a lifestyle disease. It's in the process. As long as your sugar switch is flipped on and you're eating the processed carbs or even whole foods and you're not getting the right amount of fat and protein and your sugars are too high and you're pre-diabetic, you've got that disease process turned on. That's where the pain comes in. You have inflammation, visceral fat. When you go on to low-carb nutrition, that's when you start to get control of all of that. And I'm trying to remember what else we were talking about there, but you mentioned something about all right, go ahead and remind me where
anxiety.
The anxiety and the depression. Yes, that's that gut-brain connection. I had depression my whole life. I had it as a child. My mom had to take me to a psychiatrist. They couldn't help me because I wouldn't talk. She put me on the Atkins diet. I dropped 50 pounds. I dropped the depression. I got my life back. And I noticed over time, like when I finally got into, like, I did HCG before I transitioned into a keto diet. It completely takes away the depression and the anxiety, and you feel excited. Mm-hmm. And then, but you can't hold that, because if you just used it as a diet and you didn't change your lifestyle and the sugar and the wheat comes back in, all the weight and all the fat comes back. And so when I actually went on a keto diet, the first thing that happened is my brain turned back on and I lost the depression. So when you're eating those high carbohydrate diet, and that is when you're focused more on carbohydrates, not focused on protein and fat, you could have more propensity for depression and anxiety. And that's what was one of the things I had. I had no stomach dysfunction. I just had, my symptoms were depression and anxiety. And I didn't like living like that. That's why going keto made me feel good. I was able to get my brain back.
I think there's a lot to that. I mean, first of all, if you feel pain every day, even a small amount of pain for long enough, you're going to be depressed.
Yeah.
And
well, your brain's also already struggling. If you got pain in your body, you've got pain and inflammation in your brain.
So you've got both of those going. But then usually the longer that you go, the more the pain becomes. Mm-hmm. So eventually the brain is functioning well enough to at least do this math. So this is as good as it's going to be. And it's only going to be worse. Yeah. Well, that's a recipe. If it's bad enough, whatever the thing is, that's bad enough to go do suicide. People that commit suicide generally are at a point where today is as good as it's ever going to be, and it's awful. And they give up hope. That's people that don't give up hope don't kill themselves, right? So it's the same mechanism. It's just dialed back, so it's not that severe. But, of course, you're going to be depressed because, in your mind, I'm not going to ever not feel this. And, you know, the younger you are, actually, the more depressing that is. Right?
That is really
depressing. If you're 99 and you feel that way, well, you know,
okay, I'm tired. I'm just ready to go to sleep.
Yeah, and I'll wake up, right? But if you're like 39 and you feel that way.
You know, and that's what's interesting, because I had that knee pain starting up in my mid-30s and 40s, and I noticed it as creaking, just some little bit of pain. And I was out hiking this past couple weeks ago, and a young guy in his 40s was like complaining about his knees. And I'm like, yeah, it starts pretty young. So if your knees are already creaking and having pain, you're already getting that. You know, that's inflammation. That is already the breaking down your collagen, and the inflammation breaks down your collagen. So it's not that we're supposed to have knee surgery and hip surgery. It's we're breaking down the cartilage from inflammation. And that's all preventable if you're aware of it. Because I completely reversed all of my knee pain and degeneration that I had to the point where I could walk 24 miles across the Grand Canyon rim to rim, and I've done it twice. And the second time, I was stronger. So there's things that we could do to make our body stronger and more resilient, and that is that metabolic recovery. And using those labs to find what our hidden healing opportunities are is empowering to know that we can do this and get your life back in 6 months.
Would you make much of a different prescription, though, because of those labs? In other words, like, shouldn't everybody be eating probably low carb and metabolically balanced anyway? But would there be any fine tuning that would come out of that?
Yeah, the fine tuning is making sure that you're eating foods you're not sensitive to.
Okay.
You know, if you're not aware of the foods you are sensitive to, you may not know why you have congestion or reacting to histamine. I had a client's husband that I did one protocol for her to get rid of H. pylori. We tried to do the same protocol for him. He had low DAO. He ended up in rashes. He ended up with welts, and he ended up with a lot of pain and inflammation because of trying to get rid of H. pylori the wrong way for his body.
Mm.
And so that's one way. And then I'm red sensitive to wheat and dairy. So recently I've had to take out dairy altogether. And what I noticed is I have a better heart rate. So is it that we're supposed to have an elevated heart rate, or is it the food we're eating?
Mm.
You know, specifically, even though you're on a good diet, we have leaky gut. We're going to restaurants. You're getting glutenized. You're eating the vegetable oils. You're still having some dysbiosis. You've got to correct the dysbiosis, correct your gut health to the point where all of a sudden now you know what's going on in your body. You know what not to do, and you know how to optimize your body. It's about optimization for longevity, not just kind of skating through it thinking you're doing the right things. You don't know if you're doing the right things. You don't know where a healing opportunity could lie to make your life a little bit better.
Yeah, I think this is where a lot of problems come from with people who do what I call dirty keto. They lose weight.
Right.
But they don't feel good. They're making mozzarella pizza balls, and it's
yeah.
You know, full of corn syrup.
I can't do any of that, and I won't.
I don't mean syrup. I mean corn oil or something like that. Because if they're keto, they're not syrup. But I just misspoke. But what I mean is that some of these foods that are definitely keto from a macro standpoint mm-hmm. are still not human food. And it doesn't have to be, you know, a cow, you know, led by a virgin through the fields of Austria that only fed on the best grass for the beef you're eating, but it can't be covered in soybean oil or canola oil and be clean food, right? I think we can get too extreme. I say that because there's people that write me all the time, I can't afford to buy 100% grass-fed beef. Then go to Kroger's and buy steak. Right. Go to Kroger's and buy roast beef. Go buy meat and eat meat. Like, is it better to eat something completely naturally raised? I think in a lot of ways, yes. But from a nutritional standpoint, I think the difference is so marginal. I'd rather you eat that than organic potato.
Right. Well, so right? if you're eating the beef,
you know, Nutri-Brand bread or whatever the hell you're eating instead.
When you're eating beef, you're getting, I mean, the beef is pretty well processed from that animal standpoint. They have four stomachs. They're pretty much processing everything in their body. But say if you're eating chicken that's been eating genetically modified corn and soy, you're going to be more sick. You're going to have more inflammation.
Yep.
And if you're, and I've had clients that are reactive to a standard chicken, but not a pasture-raised chicken. And if you're reactive on your food sensitivity to corn, wheat, dairy, soy, you're going to have a reaction to some of the food you're eating. And it's not necessarily that you're eating those foods, but that animal ate that food. And so it depends on how sensitive your body is going to be based on your food sensitivity. So when you take those out for 3 to 6 months to a year, you get your body to the point where you reduce that inflammation and you're able to have a stronger immune system. So it's about turning off the immune response, getting it to balance, making sure you have an immune response for one thing, because that's what the GI tract, you know, the GI test will show you if you have a good immune response, if you're reacting to the anti-gliadin wheat protein, if your calprotectin and inflammatory response is turned on or not. You will be able to see those colon and intestinal health markers, which is very powerful. Because if you've been eating the standard American diet and you've had prediabetes or diabetes, is your pancreas functioning? You know, these are all things that you want to know so that you are stronger and to be able to get to 90 or 100 with a body that's working and correcting itself. And those, they're really just good markers to find out what's going on in your body so that you can check each year. Like, if you don't take your body in for a checkup like this, you don't know what's going wrong when something happens. That's what happened to me this past year was I did not initially have any problems with my GI tract when I first tested, but all of a sudden I had H. pylori. You know, then I ended up with some bacteria I didn't want in there, you know, so then there's extra inflammation. So then I had to actually target the inflammation, reduce the H. pylori, which came back reduced, and, you know, reset my gut. And so we do need to know that because something could happen.
For someone who's 50-ish listening to this and going, all right, I know, I know I need to do something here. In general, all of these health issues are metabolic in nature, which ironically is kind of admission by medicine who declines to admit it, that this is a food problem. They literally call some of these things like full-blown metabolic syndrome.
No, they'll just call it a disease. It's completely reversible. It's not a disease until you get the disease.
I understand. But what I'm saying is when they call it metabolic syndrome, they're kind of admitting what you and I are saying. I just find that ironic. But when someone is at the point where they want to restore their metabolic health, they want to do the things that we're talking about today, in your opinion, what are kind of the first three changes you would recommend? Because I think people balance threes in their head really well. It's simple. Even if you don't want to do it, you can do it. What would you say those first three things are?
You know, just cut the processed food carbs. Go down to whole foods. Like if you still want something sweet, there's dates, there's fruit. You know, just get rid of the processed foods and make those organic, because the toxins are going to make you sick. Just having the glyphosate poisoning on your fruits and vegetables is enough to make you more sick. So go organic, get rid of the processed food, and stop the vegetable oils. I mean, you just start fine-tuning more of a holistic lifestyle. Create food that doesn't have toxins and that is not going to cause your blood sugar to be too high and elevated all the time, which then can set you up for more autoimmunity because of that high blood sugar that's coming and going up. And you're damaging your pancreas at that time.
Yeah. And we've been kind of talking too as well about the meat thing here.
Yeah.
And you mentioned like chickens and they're eating GMOs and stuff. And I think one of the things to think about here when you're deciding what to buy, and we all are not Daddy Warbucks and we all don't have a farmer down the road that grass finishes their beef. When you look at the three primary proteins Americans eat, it's chicken, pig, and cow.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And one way to look at this is, how's that animal raised?
Yes.
So the cow that everybody's worried about being grass finished, if you've actually ever lived where they raise cattle, you'd be a damn idiot to be hauling feed in for cattle for the majority of their lifetime. They eat grass. It grows. It's free. They don't grow cattle like a chicken in a cow house, right? Cattle are grazed. They generally spend somewhere between 6 to 8 weeks being grain fed at the end to fatten them, because it pays money to do that. And that cow could be finished in 24 to 26 months, but they can finish it 6 months-ish to 4 months-ish earlier by finishing it. That's why they do that. But what that means is the cow, most of its life, ate grass like it's supposed to. The chicken is born from an egg, popped out, and the first thing it does is eat GMO grains.
Right.
And it lives for, you know, 8 to 10 weeks, and it has half of its flock mates die around it. Right? They just grow more than they need, and it is a completely industrial product. So you kind of have, when you eat factory chicken, the absolute worst protein. And when you eat a cow, you kind of have the absolute best protein that's commercially produced,
right,
where I'm at. And the pig is somewhere in the middle, because the pig will often be raised in a pig house and they're fed a lot of grain. But because they're monogastric and because of how they process certain things, they tend to be less bad than something like chicken. And so I'm more concerned about, let's say, having my pork from a pastured pork producer than I am having a grass finished cow, if that makes sense.
That's what I focus on as well. Yeah, I want my pig as holistic as I can get it, and I want my chicken free range so that I could eat the skin and feel good about what I'm eating. So I don't worry about the beef as much. I definitely don't want to eat a standard chicken if I could avoid it, and I don't buy pork unless I could get a heritage, and I focus on getting clean bacon. So I only buy like maybe Applegate or Peterson's or True Story bacon, because I don't worry about it anymore when I go out, because I'm fairly healthy now, so I don't, not as strict when I go out. But I will focus on, you know, basically a hamburger salad when I go out, because it's the least toxic to me, and that's what I'll focus on as much as I can.
What got me is when they came out with the concept of the other white meat. if for pig to sell it because it was healthier because it's lighter colored. If you hunt and you go out and you shoot a feral pig, it doesn't look like beef, but it almost looks like beef. The way I described it, if you've ever shot like a young year deer, a really young deer, you know, venison veal, basically, it's red, but it's not as deep red as an older, more mature animal. Natural pork looks like that, right? It does not look like, it doesn't look anything like you see in a store. In fact, like the darkest pork cut that you'll buy commercially is a tenderloin, not the loin, but the tenderloin. The whitest part of a wild pig is at least as red as the tenderloin from a commercial pig, at least as red.
Wow, that's interesting.
And that says something, too. Something's not right. And when you buy heritage pork, it's usually much more dark-colored. And for again, they always sell to the fiat side, the fake food that's the cheapest to produce, and that's a big part of all this, I think. But they have convinced you that you want your food to be as white as possible. Like, you don't want dark-colored fish, you want white fish, right? Well, what's the best fish you can eat? Probably salmon.
Salmon.
Good, fatty salmon. Mm-hmm. I ain't never seen no white salmon.
Only the ones on the farm that they forget to put food dye in.
Yeah.
Those ones that look pretty pale.
Yeah, yeah. I'm talking about wild salmon.
Wild coho salmon, man. Those are bright red. Those are beautiful. Yep.
Absolutely gorgeous. And beautiful fat-laden fish, too. I mean, it's a funny thing.
You know, the way I look at the food is how much nutrients can you get from what you're eating? You know, you really want to focus on, okay, I want to get nutrients into my body. Which food's going to give me the best bang for my buck? And, you know, do it that way. That's basically what I focus on.
Mm-hmm.
And beef and eggs are your highest amount of protein. You know, the more protein availability and nutrients comes from the beef and the eggs overall. And then the salmon to get that omega-3 balance. But chicken to me is like a treat. And I want to get it, you know, I only eat it at home if I could get a free range one, because I don't want, you know, dirty chicken if I can avoid it.
You mentioned eggs there. One of the things I love about eggs is it's something everybody can produce. Well, I would say most people could produce if they wanted to. And I'll tell you that we go out of our way to feed most of our eggs come from ducks, and we go out of our way to feed a product that is non-GMO, organic, and no soy. But the most important one to me when you're eating eggs is the last one, the no soy.
Mm-hmm.
An egg is an ovum, and a soy is full of isoflavones, which is an estrogen. It's a phytoestrogen. That's a nice way of saying estrogen. And when you feed an animal that produces an egg, a female, a bunch of isoflavones, you have an estrogen bomb in that egg.
Wow. Yeah.
I don't like to make claims just because intellectually it works in my head. So I researched this one, and I was able to find a study that proved that it did it. And the thing that I think makes the evidence more powerful is the person that conducted the study wanted it to be true, right? They thought it was a good thing that there were higher isoflavones in a soy egg because they're healthy for you. That's the marketing.
Right.
And it took 4 weeks to triple the isoflavones in the egg. 4 weeks on the feed, and it would triple what was naturally in the egg.
Wow. Wow.
And it takes only 2 weeks for it to drastically decline. As soon as you take your birds off soy, it just starts dropping, plummets like a rock, because it's not supposed to be there. And to me, eggs are one of those things that we should be getting people to raise their own birds. And yes, feed is, I couldn't do what I do without some feed. But, I mean, you can raise a flock of backyard chickens, and you can grow and produce a lot of what they eat and cut their feed in half. Let them, you know, tractor them or free range them or whatever. And, you know, you can have the best quality food on the planet literally produced in your backyard. It doesn't get any more local than that.
Yeah, well, I think eggs are pretty much the most bioavailable protein source that we get at like 48% digestible protein, and beef comes after that. But if you're looking at vegetable protein, it's barely 18% absorbable, if that much, and it doesn't have the carnitine and nutrients that we need for our brain health.
Yeah, yeah. It's also, I think, how do you use an egg is a big thing that we need to, like, everybody thinks of eggs for breakfast, and it's either scrambled or overeating. Like, the yolk is like nature's sauce. It is, like you mentioned, a hamburger salad. Yeah, take it over easy, over medium.
Oh, with duck an egg, it's even better. Yeah.
Yeah, and put that over medium duck egg on top of that crumbled burger on top of that leafy salad, and then break that yolk.
Oh my gosh! Yeah.
And it is so delicious. It's one of the few things I still get depressed about when I go out to eat, and I forget, and I order eggs, and I'll be like, order medium, over medium eggs, and it comes on the plate with the bacon or whatever and sausage, and you break the yolk, and it just goes like water.
Oh gosh.
Oh yeah, that's how everybody else sees it. That's normal people's eggs. Like, you know, like I forget that at times, and you're like, oh, this is sad. You know, like even when they cook it longer, it just doesn't have that viscous, thick, fatty goodness that, you know, and I would still say you're better off eating eggs than, you know, Twinkies.
Right. Eggs and beef.
But if you can get naturally produced eggs, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I always will try to buy organic and free-ranged if I can get them. I don't buy traditional eggs. I'll just go without. I mean, I ran out of eggs at one point. We were having that egg shortage, and I couldn't find free-range eggs. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm not eating eggs. I didn't want to eat the regular stuff. I didn't know what they were putting in the feed. So I didn't want to take the chance, and wasn't healthy from my point of view.
Agreed, man. So, you also use a term I like. I heard you say it earlier, aging adventurously. I like that.
Isn't it great?
More and more of the gray beard comes. What do you mean? And why do you think this is really a good way to go? And like, we're seeing more and more people that are older doing the things that supposedly they can't do. I mean, I love Sean. I'm sure you know who Sean Baker is.
Too. Yeah.
Doctor. He's like 58 years old. He's breaking freaking world records on rowing and, you know, other things. How does that all play together? And I kind of feel like if we were doing more of that, maybe we'd be less depressed.
Well, yeah, because it's the whole body brain connection. It is actually living a more holistic lifestyle, living a lifestyle that is ancestral based, where we're getting back to the land, where we're getting our circadian balance, where we're actually looking for that metabolic recovery, that resilience, that for the whole body and brain to turn off the pain. So when you flip that sugar switch off, you actually flip your disease causing switch off, and you stop the pain from happening in your body. So this is where you're being proactive to choose health, to live life better, to live life without pain. You get to go out and have more movement. You get to go out and plan more hikes like I do at the Grand Canyon. You don't have any pain, so you can get out there and be a badass and hike. You know, people were amazed at 62. I could get down in the Grand Canyon and hike up. I was passing younger people. I was more toned up and tuned up with my nutrition than a lot of people on the trail. And I actually, this is the second time, the fifth time I've come up out of the Grand Canyon, and this is 10 miles from the river to the top. It's that last 5 miles that are going to, you know, kick your butt. I saw it as a challenge. I've got metabolic recovery. I've got resilience. I'm aging adventurously. I don't have any pain in my body. So I made sure the last 2 years I've been increasing my protein. I've been building more muscle. I've been taking protein aminos, so perfect aminos. I've been focusing on my protein. And I started using the ketone IQs. So ketone IQs was something I used on my hike and on my half marathons. I had really good energy. I did not have any pain by the time I got to the top. I was not exhausted. My recovery was barely 15 minutes the next day rather than 2 days. And that is when you get resilience. That's aging adventurously. When you get excited about doing these things and you choose to have health, you choose to look at your food holistically, you choose to look at food as like, okay, what information do I want to put in my body today? How much protein am I going to focus on today? Sure, yeah, I'd like to have that little thing, but have a Lily's chocolate. Make your own low-carb biscuit. I've got a recipe book that you could download. That's the Food Bridges to Low-Carb Living. So that you could turn off your inflammation, live and eat foods that make you feel good and feel happy. You don't have to be carnivore, but you could just get onto those food bridges, turn off the pain of inflammation, and you're aging adventurously. This is what I love. This is what I'm doing. No pain at 62, no medicine, no disease. I flipped it all off. You know, I don't know exactly where I'm going to end up, but if I could hike the Grand Canyon once a year and feel great, you know, that's my goal.
But you mentioned the Lily's chocolate. I find that interesting. You don't have to give up everything.
No. Like,
I don't do this often, maybe a couple times a month, but every once in a while I'll buy like the best unsweetened cocoa powder you can get.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll throw a tablespoon of that into coffee and throw it in NutriNinja and blend that up. And people talk about bulletproof coffee, throw a couple of tablespoons of
Yeah, you could add that in
that. Yep. And then, you got to do this right. You put the cream in and give it one more little quick blast. You put the cream in the whole time, things start to go wrong. But that is like, I don't need sugar in that.
Mm-mm.
There's enough sweetness and the residual sweetness from the cream to begin with. And, you know, make good coffee the right way. Don't make crappy coffee.
There you go. It's got to be mold free.
I'd rather have that than a hot chocolate.
Yeah, actually, the hot chocolate often tastes too sweet in the morning, but I've been using Perfect Aminos. It tastes a little too sweet, but I use it because I, as a woman over 50 at 62, your body's less efficient to absorb protein. And so this gives me all the protein aminos that I need. And if I do this 3 times a day, I'm actually programming my neural biology and for my brain to function better, stronger, and to reduce the risk for inflammation, dementia. I mean, if you think you need an antidepressant, all you're missing is amino acids. I mean, if you look at what our brain needs, you need to look at the amino acids that we're not absorbing in our food. That's why it's important to get the labs too. We got to figure out digestion. We got to figure out absorption. You need to be able to absorb the food you're eating. You could be spending all that money on grass-fed beef and not absorbing it correctly. You know, that's why it's important to tune up your body and know what's going on. Well, we need to get those amino acids in there for the brain to work.
Absolutely. Why is the standard medical system missing the mark, especially with women over 50? I think that's a place that I find it interesting. A lot of doctors will tell people something like, well, you have some fatty liver, but most people do. Right? Like stuff like that. Like, okay, most people do. I think it's like they call it a liver because you need it to live. Maybe this is something we should pay attention to. And how can people become, like the way you put it, the CEO of their own health,
mm-hmm.
using food and functional data?
How can you do that? And you had mentioned about why they don't support women over 50 is because they'd have to actually admit that what they're doing is wrong. Mm-hmm. And that we need more hormonal balance and hormonal support, but they've been doing fear mongering for BHRT for years. And it's just now coming back around that we need to support our hormones, because if we don't support our hormones, we're going to have low bone mass, we're going to have less muscle mass, and we're going to have more risk for dementia. And when estrogen is lower, we actually have lower risk for getting choline. And if you're not eating eggs, you're more at risk for dementia. And so they don't know how to manage this. All they want to do is give you an antidepressant, or put you on a thyroid drug, or put you on a bone medication because you're now osteoporosis because you didn't absorb enough protein or eat enough protein for your body. And so they're not addressing health issues for women over 50. They're not addressing the hormones enough. And they're not addressing the fact that women are not eating enough protein. They are saying eat less protein. And so therefore your body will break down faster and have more weight gain in the middle, and you will have runaway weight gain in menopause because you're not addressing your diet and lifestyle. And so the medical system cannot do that. This is holistic health that starts in the kitchen, that you got to do at home to age adventurously and have longevity. You got to do it in the kitchen and at home.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to that. I think there's a lot of things they're doing wrong that fixing mm-hmm. the problem. Like I mentioned women over 50 because that's kind of your real strong angle, but I think it's true of all of us.
All of us. I mean, my problem started, you know, I was 225 pounds in my 30s. So it definitely started before, you know, in my 30s. That's when my asthma started.
I think it comes down to this. Upton Sinclair once said, it is difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends upon his not understanding it. And these doctors have been teaching the food pyramid and the food plate and the food compass for longer than I've been alive. And they have been indoctrinated to this and they believe this. And the more you say something and advise people to do something and are paid to do it, the more entrenched you become in this has to be true. Because what does it mean about you if you're a 50-year-old doctor that's been teaching your patients for 25 years to follow this nutritional regime and you're wrong?
Right.
That's a lot harder to admit. And then you'd think, well, then the younger doctors would be the one to break out, but they're more indoctrinated than the older doctors.
No,
at least the older doctor remembers the grandma that threw the Crisco at the guy's head when he brought it in the house, right? Like, they remember that. These young, and they've grown up with nothing but Twinkies and sodas their whole freaking life. And 11, I've always found that just to be the dumbest thing I've ever heard. 11 servings of grains and like, I remember being a kid, bread and grains, eat 11 servings a day. I'm like, I don't eat 11 servings of fucking anything at all. I don't do it. I don't even know. How do you eat that many servings of anything?
That's just a recipe for diabetes. That's just eating all day long with your blood sugar elevated. I mean, that's the recipe for diabetes right there.
Have you ever thought about it, though, if that's the food the cow eats, right? And have you ever thought about what does a cow do? It eats from the minute it wakes up till it goes to sleep.
No, all herbivores.
All it does is eat. Elephants eat nonstop. All these animals that produce red meat that humans would eat, they eat non-freaking-stop. They have to. Because what they're eating, while their body is evolved to live on it, does not have enough nutrition to be satiating.
No, they actually have those. They have four stomachs. I don't know the full part of it, but there's also an ecosystem in those stomachs, and there's a lot of bugs. And so those bugs are actually going in there and changing things. And so they're also digesting the bugs that they're eating. And that's actually changing the process of their nutrition in their body. It's so that four stomachs is like a factory.
And you don't have, I don't have four stomachs.
No, we don't.
These are fermentation chambers, right? And, you know, anybody that's ever opened up a rumen to butcher it knows it's actually worse in the first stomach than as it goes down. It begins to break down. There's a lot of bacterial and fungal activity going on inside that animal to make that food extract the nutrient that is there so it can eat it. Well, you don't have that. You have a liver almost as big as a freaking cow does, and you're 20% to 10% the size of the cow. Why? Because you're designed to process fat and eat meat.
Right.
That's your job. That's why you have organs that are designed for that, and the cow has an organ designed to eat freaking grass. The gorilla eats freaking fiber out of the tree and shit, but it also eats nonstop.
Yeah, it's been interesting when I heard that a bird eats grains, it'll eat seeds and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But they have a gullet, and that gullet, what's it doing? It's fermenting the grain. We don't have fermentation in our body. That's why we have to ferment it outside our body. We need to have the kimchi, the sauerkraut, and ferment. You know, that's what people used to do. If they were eating the grains, they were fermenting it. They were processing it so that we could break it down. They had learned that upon generations. What we've gotten away from is doing that natural process with our food. That's why sourdough is a better choice. But overall, if you've got a food sensitivity, any pain in your body and a disease, and you've got dysbiosis, that wheat's going to hurt you. It's not going to help you.
Yeah, that birds have that gizzard you're talking about, and it's two things going on in there. One, the reason birds eat grit is they basically, that grit doesn't go all the way through them right away. They store it in their gizzard, and if you've ever butchered poultry, when you split that gizzard open, it's like sandpaper in there. It's like 20 grit, like sandpaper in there, and then whatever it's working on, and it's like a muscle. A gizzard's very tough.
When you cook gizzards,
you got to cook them a long time to soften them up, or other ways you can prepare them. And it's in there, and it's grinding those seeds up, and it's a fermentation process as well. You don't have a gizzard. You don't have four stomachs. The food those things eat is not the food you're supposed to eat. You don't biologically match the species you're emulating, and that's why it might be very healthy for a cow to live on grass, but it's not for you. And even the cow doesn't really eat grain. The cow wants the young shoots of the grass that are high in protein. When we graze on a one-third grade. We graze a third of the grass, and we move the animal. And a third of the grass, and we move the animal. By the time that grass is putting on seed heads, now they'll eat it. Cow dumb, they'll eat anything. But the straw that's coming up from that grass, that cow wants something to do with. It's not grass anymore. Now it's straw. It's hollow. The grain has taken all of the energy out of the plant. Well-grained grass is perennial, and it's herbs, forbs, and grasses, and it never goes to seed.
And they know how to forage. You know, if they're out there foraging, they're looking for the ones that are medicinal, the ones that are going to do what they need to do to get the nutrition they need. They'll look around for it all over.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's really interesting.
Well, in nature, what happens is before you wipe the predators out anyway, all the ruminants stay in. They're all herd animals. They never run off by themselves, unless you're talking about like deer and stuff like that. There's a more browsing ruminant. But your grazing ruminants, they all stay together, and then that's their defensive mechanism from the wolves, from the coyotes, if it's a wildebeest, from the lions, et cetera. And that causes them to graze an area only so long, and then they move. And then they graze that, and they move. And when we do rotational grazing with grass-fed animals, that one-third is based on observation. They graze a third, they trample a third, and a third is left to regrow. And you get the sweetest, most beautiful pasture when you do that. And the pasture is good for the sheep or the cow, and it ain't good for you. It's very, very simple. And it's,
yeah, and the other thing to think about that is, like, if you were going to eat only plant-based and eat only factory food, there's no soil left to plant foods because you have the cattle on the soil for that biological process of making soil to make grass so that the cows can eat the grass. But if without cattle on the soil, you end up with dirt that doesn't have any nutrients. So there's no way to grow food.
It's really great that you bring that up because a lot of this industrial food is sold under the banner of sustainability.
Right. It's
so not what's more sustainable? I've got the Amy B here just mentioned my cover crop course and I've got a picture in there of a field and what it looks like you're standing off the side of a road. It's over 3 foot of drop and it looks like you got a fill road with a drop. It's not, it's a field. It's been farmed since the 20s. That's how much topsoil was lost since the 1920s. In 100 years,
huge.
3 foot of topsoil is gone.
Wow.
And it's a corn bean rotation. So what's more sustainable, growing corn and beans and potatoes and something that's wiping out 3 foot of soil when we don't have 3 foot of soil in 100 years, right? Like 100 years is a mouse fart in history. It's a blink of an eye, right? It's long to us because it's about how long we live at our longest. But in the geological sense, it's nothing. So we're wiping out 3 foot of the most gorgeous topsoil ever created. It took millennia to create in 100 years, and that's sustainable. But a cow goes on the grass, eats the grass, poops the grass out, grows more grass, builds topsoil to where people like Joel Salatin literally have had to raise their fence posts. Because they built so much topsoil that the fence isn't high enough anymore.
That's so cool. Right?
Now, how is that less sustainable than growing corn and soybeans and processing it into industrial slop and feeding it to children? It doesn't make any sense in the world to claim that. You have got to have had people divorced from all knowledge of natural systems to sell that to them, but marketing is strong shit. Marketing is the strongest force known to man. You can convince people of the most ridiculous nonsense, and they'll fight to their death against each other to defend nonsense.
Right. Yeah.
Especially if you chemically devalue their capability of their brain by feeding them slop since the time they were born.
Yeah.
Do you know this? I just discovered this.
Yeah.
Okay. I just finished today, actually, a book called Fiat Food, and it's tied into the Bitcoin space, but it's mostly focused on the food side. And a lot of this veganism in the United States goes back to the Seventh-day Adventists in the 1800s. Yeah. And they believe that if you ate too much meat, you had too high a sex drive. And as children, if you masturbated as a child, it led to your early death. That's what they believed. It started with a group called the Millerites that said, you know, Jesus will be back on this exact day, and then he didn't show up. And I can't remember the lady that founded the Adventist. She just picked it up and said he was right about everything except the day.
Right. It's still wrong to this day. I mean, that Seventh-day Adventist is just really, really hanging in.
Then they created all these institutions that are actually controlled by them but look like independent scientific institutions. They tied in with the food industrialists like Post and Kellogg. And the Kellogg original cereal formula was designed specifically to repress the sex drive.
Yep.
It was part of a sanitarium. And then people like Ansel Keys grabbed onto this with the bullshit seven country study in the Eisenhower years and merged it all together and made it like there was all this scientific evidence. But there's no scientific evidence that this is good for people. It doesn't exist. You can't. When they say you people that eat more meat have more coronary disease. OK, show me a study that proves that. That took into account all the other stuff they ate. I've had an open challenge since 2018, so 7 years, $1,000 to the person that can put that study in front of me.
I don't think they can. I mean, they tried to, Tim Folks, in South Africa. Tim Noakes in South Africa. You know, he tweeted something that babies should be weaned on meat, which they should be. And then a dietitian turned him in and they tried to, you know, for 4 years, took him to court. They couldn't prove a single thing, but he could. He brought in all the specialists, all the low carb nutrition specialists and functional medicine practitioners, Gary Taubes and everybody else. They proved everything. The other team couldn't prove a single thing. And so Tim Noakes did win after thousands of hours of battling it. But yeah, they can't prove a single thing.
I think I know you here, Tom, and I think it was the doctor when it finally ended, he was like in tears that it was finally over, they were no longer.
Tim Noakes. He's got a book out there on the process. You can listen to it on Audible. It's pretty interesting. And then the other thing is they tried to, take down Gary Fecky, because Gary Fecky was tired of chopping people's legs off. So he decided to tell them how to eat. And they said, you can't do that. And so they fired him.
But don't tell them to change their diet. That's right? Dangerous.
So he and his wife had to go to battle. So he finally got his job back. But God forbid if you should tell somebody to stop eating a certain thing so you could save your leg. My dad died with no legs, kidney failure. And I had an older brother who was ready for insulin, and he did my program and reversed his diabetes and got off rid of all of his weights, doing really well, aging adventurously. I mean, there's so many things we can do if you actually choose that health to live adventurously and to get rid of the poisons that are coming in on us. I mean, even just getting the glyphosate poisoning onto your foods, that's a lot of chemicals coming into your body that's causing problems. And so, there's so many things we can do to protect ourselves when we start studying it.
You can only do so much with too, because it's so prevalent. They've detected glyphosate in the urine of people who have never eaten anything that's intentionally been glyphosate.
It's everywhere. And that's why I use BEAM, BEAM minerals. You get your BEAM minerals that actually helps you pull out the glyphosate out of your digestive tract before taking it into your body. And Stephanie Seneff, she's really big on studying the glyphosate poisoning. And her husband, she had his heart attack, and she traced it back to all those chemicals basically causing the problem.
Did you ever see the thing with a guy that was a Monsanto consultant, and he was talking about how safe glyphosate was?
Oh, yeah, and they asked him, do you want to drink some?
And he said, no. Glass right in front of him, and he freaking snapped out. And I said, well, maybe it's not as safe as you say then, bro.
Right?
Because he totally snaps his shit when he's like, you could just eat it. It's fine. Here's a glass of it. Drink it. He throws a shit fit like a little kid and runs out.
Right? That is so funny. Yep.
You do work, I'm sure you'd work with anybody, but you're kind of your happy place, your target zone is women that are being told things like you're just getting older.
Right.
And I think that is, I'm not sure exactly why, but I do think women, especially with this modern diet, age harder than men. They live longer, but they age harder. There's a lot more 65-year-old dudes, even if they've been eating industrial slop, that somehow can go to work on construction, then there are women that can do what they did when they were 35 years. Mm-hmm. Man might do it slower, but he can still do it. What do you do to help them reclaim their health and explain that this is not normal? Because I think that's the big thing. We've been lied to the point where we just believe you get older, you get slower, you get in pain, and it hurts, and it sucks, and you die.
Yeah.
And that's not the way it's supposed to be.
Right, right. So that's why I only work with low carb nutrition. You know, whether you want to be carnivore, keto, just low carb, you're just getting started, I kind of meet you where you're at. Let you do some fasting, pull in the bulletproof coffee, make sure that you're not eating your food sensitivity. So I run that food sensitivity test and make sure what's going on in there is not, is corrected inside your body. Running the hair tissue mineral analysis helps me balance your calcium, magnesium, potassium, sodium, and it shows if your chromium and selenium are too low. If those are too low, you've got a blood sugar dysregulation, you've got a thyroid dysfunction, and then we correlate all of that with the Dutch test for those adrenals and cortisol levels to get it all balanced, to see where you need the tune-up. Like if you're not methylating it and you've never taken the MFTHFR test to find out if you're not a methylator. You need to have the right B vitamins in your body. You need to know if your glutathione is functioning. These tests will show you that. If you're absorbing your B12, if you're getting your biotin and B6 for detoxification, you could see across the board where you're detoxifying or where you're not. And so when I run all of this, the first 4 weeks is pretty intensive. I get together weekly with people. I have cell phone contact. I'm tuning into what's going on in your body. What are your symptoms? I give you a metabolic and thyroid analysis, and I do a health intake. And then I kind of like, okay, you're doing this, this, and this. Let's do this, this, and this. I had a client that started working with me in January, and we did that very same thing. Just 1 week into this program, she'd been carnivore. She gained 5 pounds. She was depressed. She was unhappy. 1 week with me, she's like, well, I lost 2.5 pounds. She goes, what the heck? How did you do that? But it's just tuning into what my experience is, my education, what I know, and listening to the client, finding out what your problem is and how to tweak it, and knowing that the clinical processes of running these labs and what is happening metabolically, your insulin resistance, the brain connection, and getting the gut to follow so that your brain works. And so it's taking out the things that are interferences. I don't treat or medicate anybody. I just pretty much just follow the process of FDN, which is DRESS, which is your diet, rest and sleep, exercise, movement, stress, circadian rhythm, making sure you're reducing the toxic load on your body, making sure you're getting rid of vegetable oils, creating that holistic lifestyle that's going to turn off the visceral fat. Stop the visceral fat accumulation and get rid of it. That's one of the things that I've been doing to get rid of, you know, my fat, to clean up my body. I never wanted to have the fat on my body because I wanted to get rid of the inflammation. So for me, it was more about getting rid of inflammation. And so my focus is to correct your cravings, your hunger, get rid of your inflammation, turn off your pain, get your body to a healing state. It works so well. I'm just blown away every single time, and it just lights me up. I'm so grateful I get to do this process. And then just, you know, 6 labs gives me more information than, say, just the food sensitivity test. If you're going to do it on your own, you don't have this information. You don't have my 100 pounds of lived experience that I've spent the last 25 years manipulating. And just, you know, I'm a science experiment, you know, N in one. You know, this is what works. And I've fine-tuned it for women over 50 in menopause to turn off the pain of inflammation, get your life back, get down on the ground, play with your grandkids, get outside, walk, plan that vacation you want to take, look and feel good in your body. I've never felt as beautiful and feel good in my body as I do to this day. And I can wake up every morning and not have to worry about gaining weight. I don't have to worry about having pain in my body. I don't take medications. I've never even been on an antidepressant. But what I will take is the right supplements for what I need for my body. The perfect aminos, the MCT oil, getting the butter, getting the tallow, you know, eating the food that's right for my body, but following up with the supplements that I feel I need based on my test labs, like the minerals. I'm not going to go without salt and potassium. I'm going to be bringing in my hormone balance. You know, those are the things that I focus on. Selenium and chromium to this day, I cannot seem to keep that in my body. My body doesn't keep it in. I have to add it in. And then boron to balance calcium. These are all the things that the labs will show us what we need to do for women over 50.
So for you, what does a day in the life look like for someone who's living pain-free, prescription-free, and thriving after 60? And how's that different from 10 years ago?
It's much more fine-tuned. I'm more focused on getting the right amount of protein. It may not be right when I drink my coffee. I do black coffee in the morning. And like before this call, I made a cup of bulletproof coffee because that turns my brain on. I made low carb biscuits yesterday and I made them with tallow. So I had a little bit of coconut butter and almond butter on that. And I ate that with my coffee. It didn't interfere with ketosis at all. And when I finish out today, I don't have anything ready to eat, but I'll go out for a walk. First thing in the morning is what I'm usually doing before coffee is I'm getting outside or I'm taking my coffee with me and I'm grounding. I'm getting sunlight in my eyes. That's always something I have to do because I know I feel better. If I don't do this, I don't feel right. Maybe a few times a week, I'll make sure I get under my red light. I've done that already today. Sometimes I get too busy and I don't do my red light, but I want better skin and it helps with hair growth. So I don't have any hair loss and my skin is pretty good for this age. I mean, there's wrinkles, but it's in good shape. I'm using my my estradiol. I'm using progesterone. I'm taking DHEA. I'm using pregnenolone. I'm focused on hormones because as a woman over 60, you can't make it. Mm. And if you don't, you're just going to have weaker bones, weaker heart, weaker muscles. And then, like yesterday, I think yesterday I had beef stew for dinner. I might just have eggs and ham. There's just, I'm making sure that I'm getting 30 grams plus of protein when I eat. Mm. That's my focus. I'm making sure I get walks and I'm getting movement. I make sure I get my sunlight, my circadian rhythm. That's my daily process. I don't eat anything that I feel is going to poison my body. I take minerals. I get salt, potassium every day. And those are things that I don't do without. And I take the targeted supplements that I have created that I need based on my lab work.
And what can you say more about what you like a day, like a typical day of diet is? What are you eating as a regular everyday thing?
Okay. Well, eggs is every day, almost every day. A hamburger patty is pretty simple and easy to put in the toaster oven. I'll eat that every day. I keep salmon. I might make a salmon fillet. I'll do, if I'm really lazy and don't have time, it's a can of, like the other day after a conference, I kind of wanted to do a reset. I just ate sardines with mayonnaise. That was my meal for the day. It's beef, it's eggs, it's Canadian bacon. It might be regular bacon. I'm going to get heritage bacon as best I can. And eating ground beef. I don't buy steak because it's more expensive, and I really don't like steak as much as I like hamburger. I like the fat in hamburger. I'm just not a steak person. I don't know why. But I do.
We're in disagreement today. I love steak, but it is more expensive. Yeah. But, you know, to me, the epitome of the perfect meal for nutrition is a ribeye.
Yeah. I just don't get into the habit of steak.
A prime marbled ribeye, too. But I do a lot with ground beef. And I'm big on, like, ground beef's got stupid expensive, right? It was at the grocery store and was looking at the meat case of my grandson. He goes, wow, look at this. And it was just like 85.15 ground beef. It was like $8.50 a pound.
Yeah.
And I was showing him, I'm like, look, so you can buy this piece of bottom round right here. And you buy this piece of brisket right here. And the brisket's got half fat. And then we're going to take these two things, cut them up, throw them in a grinder. And all in, we got about $4 a pound in the ground beef.
So you're grinding it. That works out pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, I also get the grind I want. I can double grind
it. I can do
a quartz ground. And, you know, it wagon wheel ground and do it. It's almost like, I can't remember what the Mexicans call it, where it's like the chopped beef. It's almost ground, but it's more done by chopping.
Yeah.
Carne asada, I think is what
I mean, I like those things. It's just I'm to the point where I'm kind of lazy and I don't feel like making them. It might take more work. I mean, I'm going to maybe put some garlic and some onion in my food. I can, yesterday I bought some cabbage. I wanted to make a ground beef and cabbage dish. So those are easy. I kind of like to put everything in one pan and just cook it up. And so to me, a one pot dish, and I like hot, soupy kind of stew-like meals. And so maybe I gravitate more towards that than I do just a steak. And so that's just something kind of that I like to just throw it in a pan and forget about it for a little bit and then come back to it. Or that, or just eat a whole chicken and make sure I eat all the crispy skin first. You know, I'll follow it up with any kimchi or sauerkraut, or I'll have an
original. I was going to ask you, like, we're very carnivore-centric there. So what are some of the things that are not carnivore that you...
So, like, today I had the low-carb biscuits. I've been making some low-carb bread off and on, which is made with tahini and eggs. And it's just like tahini egg bread. I'll have that as once in a while. I like an arugula salad. I'm trying to bring in more vegetables and stay away from being too hardcore carnivore because that's easier. So I kind of have to actually focus on bringing in vegetables because I kind of got out of the habit. But I do like an arugula salad. I like to have Parmesan on there with some sunflower seed or some pepitas, pumpkin seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then I might throw in some goat cheese or some pomegranates. Like right now it's pomegranate season. I've got pomegranate tree. I mean, I might just eat some raw or put it into a drink and puree it in the blender. But I don't do a lot, you know, but this is just pomegranate season. So I'm eating with the seasons at this point.
All right, let's do these lightning round. I got some questions in comments for here, but let's do them quick because we're at an hour and a half now.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, yeah. Hunter says, a recommendation for PCOS. I think that's
polycystic ovarian syndrome. I had it in my mid-30s, so I've definitely been pre-diabetic. You know, the whole time I'd been sick and overweight. That is basically an insulin-resistant state. That is when your sugar levels are too high, you're pre-diabetic, they're going to put you on metformin. They didn't do that back in the day. They just kind of laughed at me and said, oh, yeah, you're PCOS. They didn't give me any idea whatsoever when I was diagnosed. And it's basically a pre-diabetic state, and you just treat it like a diabetes. And you just, your sugar levels are too high, and insulin resistance.
That just seems to me like it could also be part of declining fertility rates.
Well, part of the issue
on your ovary,
fertility rate. Yeah. Well, it's because when you're PCOS, your estrogen is aromatizing to testosterone, so you have a lower estrogen and you have higher testosterone. So you add more testosterone dominant, you have less fertility. So that is an issue. And fertility, when Dr. Kiltz has noticed, I did a podcast on him with him one time, but one of the things he does is try to get people to eat more beef, more meat, more carnivore for fertility, because too many people are eating too many carbohydrates and they're dropping their fertility rates. And there was something else on the fertility that I had heard, but it's the pesticides that are damaging fertility, is right, the glyphosate and all the pesticides.
I don't think that mRNA vaccines are helping either, but that's neither here nor there. Nurse Wang says, my wife was diagnosed with cancer, and if it wasn't for what Jack had been teaching, we would have never have found our integrative oncology to confirm that guided us low carb for cancer. I think that's a huge thing, that sugar is tumor fuel.
It is, and that's the whole
and
thing.
And nutrition is telling people to drink freaking carrot juice when they have cancer. It's like pouring gas on a fire and going, I don't know why the flames got higher.
No, I mean, you want to flip your sugar switch off. And when you do that, you flip your disease-causing genes off. And so, and also it's nutrients that you may not be getting from dysbiosis and other things. It's the lack of iodine in the diet. There's so many chemicals in our diet. It is a whole holistic process. We need iodine, and people aren't getting iodine. It's very controversial, but, you know, we need that to protect ourselves from cancer too.
Croc Prop Broccoli was over on Rumble, so I put this in myself here. Basically, can any lab run these tests, like the Dutch test and the GI map and HTMA? Where do people get these tests done?
Well, those are coming from functional medicine practitioners. The medical system won't run them. I've had a couple people try to get their medical system to try to run the labs, but they just don't. They don't know how to interpret them. They're not going to offer them. They just want to do blood work. You know, they're not going to really look at your gut. They don't know what to do with it once they give you this information, because, you know, it's got to be analyzed. And then looking at your health intake and your history, how does that apply to you? And what are the connections and the patterns? And they're not going to look at six different labs and give you that recommendation or look to see what's actually going on in your body at the root level. They don't do that. They only treat symptoms, diseases with drugs and surgery.
Nurse Wang, he says, my wife did the Dutch test, which showed her cortisol was off the charts. We were fasting 3 days every other week. After the test, she stopped long fasting and limited it to IF or intermittent fasting.
That's good. Yeah.
I would think fasting can definitely be beneficial, but frequent fasting sends to the body the signal that food is scarce.
Right. It's more of a famine process. Intermittent fasting is better. When you're over 50, you have to also kind of balance the hormones. Like if it raises your cortisol levels and puts you into a fight and flight response, you kind of want to find that balance. So I used to do more intermittent fasting, but now that I'm older, I do less of it. Like I had the biscuit with almond butter this morning with my coffee. I didn't specifically fast, but I'm going to stop eating by a certain time at night and not eat at dark. So then my intermittent fasting is a minimum of 12 hours most days. It might be 12 to 14 hours. And so that's how I manage it. You don't want your body to be in a famine state that you burn your muscle, especially over 50.
I will frequently be in 18-6 for long periods of time because I generally am a two-meal-a-day person.
Yeah, that's a good place to be.
And I will often have to remind myself that I need to eat my evening meal early enough to keep that going, because what will happen is you become so satiated. And that's why I try to make my two-meal-a-day approach. Like today, I mentioned it, torment people that were talking about it in the chat. that my meal today is just basically a beef soup. It's made with some chili peppers and some trim off of a chuck roll that I cut up, and I'm going to put a big old egg on top of it. But that one little bowl of soup will be what I eat till dinner.
Yeah.
And then dinner, we're doing ground Wagyu beef, like basically hamburgers without a bun. Right.
Yeah.
And like that is, here's the weird thing. You start telling people you can eat as much as you want, but what you end up figuring out is you actually eat less food. You can have as much as you want, eat all you want. Don't worry a bit about calories. And with a few exceptions, I always kind of temper that with, there are people that will break that. Greg Ellis, who's a well-known PhD that did research on this before anybody was doing it. He's back pre-Atkins. He was doing his initial research. When he was told that, when he was a college football player, you know, this is a dude that would sit down and eat 6 pounds of beef. So if you're that outlier, okay, maybe you can overrun it. But for most of us, like, what often happens is you just realize I'm not eating that much food anymore, in volume, I mean, because you're getting the nutrition. Mm-hmm. So your body stops saying I'm hungry. Like, when you're always hungry and you're always eating, that should tell you something's wrong there.
Yeah, I just worked with somebody. We just had a one-hour call, and I looked at her food journal. She's eating 6 times a day. She's eating not enough protein, breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks in between everything, and snacks after dinner. And she's, like, feeling frustrated, tired, and gaining weight. So I said, just put all the meals together in 3 meals. Make sure you get that 30 grams of protein. Eat it all, 3 meals. She didn't think she could do it because she works at a warehouse and is active. And she came back all smiles. She goes, oh, my God, that works. I had all the energy I needed just eating the 3 meals altogether without the snacking, because you're giving your body all the energy it needs to create energy.
So Amy says she fed all the buckwheat seeds from her cover crop back to her chickens. And she's one of the graduates of my cover crop class.
Cool.
So that's a great way to go. You look at, what does it take to process buckwheat? Buckwheat is food. Some people have used as food for thousands of years. It's hard to process buckwheat. It's in this little triangular shaped case. It doesn't want to come out. You cannot eat the holes. But you know what? A chicken, you just throw it on the ground, they eat it.
Right.
Right. So you got bees, you got cover crop, you got green manure for your crops, and you got food for your chickens. Like, I'm getting to the point where I'm going to probably be growing more food for my ducks than for me. You know, because the ducks give me food, so I need to give them food. That's,
yeah, they got to be the priority. Right. Mike, you were saying how you were fasting or just eating the 2 meals a day.
Yeah.
On Sunday, I was on a project, and so I had some bulletproof coffee for breakfast. I wanted my brain to work. I started working at 10, and it was like 4 or 5 o'clock. I'm like, okay, I got to stop. I got to eat. I haven't eaten yet.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't hungry. It's just that I needed to make time to eat. So there's days where I might go longer without eating. It might just be 1 meal a day, or sometimes it's just the 2 big meals a day, and I'm just working in food as I go along.
Yeah, and I mean, I want to be clear. I don't always do 2 meals a day. Like, if I'm hungry, I eat.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think that's one of the things. Like, if you want to schedule some fasts in and be rigorous about it, okay, fine. But in general, like, if I'm getting ready to do the show, and I'm like, I'm going to be really hungry by the time the show's over, then I'll, a lot of times I'll have sausages or something in the refrigerator. I'll just grab one cold out of the refrigerator and eat that. And I don't feel like I failed because I had 3 meals that day. I just generally find that 2 is more than enough.
Right.
And then when you eat your last meal of the day, eat a lot. Eat till you don't want any more. And that will prevent the 9:30 at night, right before you go to bed, going,
Exactly. Get 30 to 50 grams of protein before bed at dinner, and your appetite is completely turned off. Our bodies are designed to seek out protein. If you do not get the right amount of protein, your hunger will not turn off. You have to eat to satiation.
And then I might be summoning a demon here by taking a question from Jake Robinson, because he's the question nonstop machine. But he said, can we ask you about microplastics? And when he says estrogen there, we've kind of talked about that already. But I think he means from dietary sources.
Well, the thing about plastics is when you're getting those endocrine disruptors and the xenoestrogens into the body from plastics, they can actually be they mimic estrogens, but they make your body fat. Like, if you cook with in the microwave out of plastics, you're actually getting that plastic into your body, and that's an endocrine disruptor, and that can cause you to gain more fat. I remember a story of a gentleman that was healthy, and then he got married, and they didn't think about it, but his wife started making leftovers, putting hot leftovers in plastic containers. He would take it to work, he would put it in the microwave, he gained weight and couldn't figure out why he got fat. And it's an endocrine disruptor. And when I see people cooking in a microwave and using plastics like that, I mean, that's going to mess up your body. So those are going to create that estrogen effect in the body that creates more fat mass. And we want to balance, you know, estrogens. That's where all the toxins, that's why we want organic produce on our, you know, organic produce, organic products on our body. You know, your chemicals that you're putting on your skin are endocrine disruptors.
Absolutely. So real quick here at the end, tell everybody how they can get in touch with you, learn more about what you do, maybe work with you.
Yeah. So my website is Lori Ballou, L-O-R-I. There you go. It's right up there at loriballou.com. You could download my workbook, you know, the 8 essential hacks to lose weight. That's how I got started. I have a recipe book as well. And that's going to help you start off and get started on those food bridges. Lots of recipes there for the holidays. There's so many things we can do. You can check out the testimonies. I just love how you guys are going through this. Check out the testimonies. Get answers. Get clarity. Book a free call. And, you know, I could get to know you. You could get to know me. And we could see if working together is a fit for both of us.
And, folks, as always, as soon as we're done with the live, I'll go into production mode and get the audio out, which is about 1,000 to 1 on listeners, honestly, is, you know, our audience came up in the world of audio podcasting. Video is actually fairly new for a show that's 17 years old. If you guys want her website and all her social media and everything in the audio version when it gets published on the blog with the show notes and all the information, all the links will be there. So if you're driving down the road listening to us on audio right now or whatever, you don't have to write nothing down. Just go to the survivalpodcast.com, pull up episode 3747. Everything's all done and all ready to go. All I got to do is the audio editing, drop it in, upload, and hit publish, and that'll be out. And if you go there right now and we're still live, there won't be anything there yet because we're not done yet. Every time I say that, somebody's like, the link doesn't work. I'm finished. We're live. You can't have a pre-recorded show published when it's still being produced. So it'll take about 30 to 45 minutes from right now. Lori, thanks for being with us.
That was so much fun. That was a lot of fun. I appreciate you having me here. And everybody know you can age adventurously and turn off that pain in your body. Start planning that hike with the Grand Canyon because you could do it. You just have to figure out what's going on in your body. Correct it.
All right. Thanks for being with us today, Lori.
All right. Thank you.
Bye now. All right. Real quick, guys, before we wrap up, I'm not going to go long on this because we pretty much hit it all day long today. But as always, you can always help support our show by doing your online shopping at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. I've got over 500 products reviewed there. There's a catalog where you can go through by category and see all the things I've ever reviewed in the past to get recommendations on things. But even if you buy anything online, if you start there and use my links, you'll help us out. Today's item of the day, and it's probably going to stay item of the day for the whole week, is the book I was talking about with Lori called Fiat Food by Matthew Lisnick and Saifedean Amos. And I thought I knew the genesis of this problem. And I knew it was intertwined, not necessarily the cause is fiat money, but it was intertwined with fiat economics. But I didn't know how deep the rabbit hole went. The stuff I talked about with the Seventh-day Adventists and their ridiculous beliefs about human sexuality being evil, because we want more people. That's how it works. Kellogg, the guy that founded Kellogg, never consummated his marriage. I don't think that's normal behavior that we should emulate. This book will tell you all that more. You'll learn all of the ways in which the fiat food that we have today, it isn't like they sat down and said, let's create fiat money and make fiat food. When you create fiat money and you make it part of your economy and you drive the cost of everything that actually takes real work to produce up, people then buy the industrial slop that's left over. This is a byproduct result. I've wanted to read this book for a long time. I just never made time to do it. I've read the other two books in the series, The Bitcoin Standard and The Fiat Standard by Saifedean. And I didn't make time to read this because I'm like, I think I already know. And I read something on one, it was a Facebook or X. Somebody posted that I follow and it said, I read this book and that was the end of it for me. I will not eat this food anymore. And they're all in on the low carb, all natural lifestyle now. And I went, well, if that did it for somebody who wasn't in that van, maybe I need to read this. It might be one of the most important things you ever read. So I highly recommend you read it. Definitely use my link if you're going to order it online. And it comes in hard copy, either soft or hardcover. Comes in the Kindle ebook, and you can get it audio on Audible as well. With that, take care, guys. Appreciate you tuning in. Tomorrow we'll have an expert counsel Q&A show for the week. And then next week we'll do it all over again. You should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. Revolution.